morning. Al and I will share this time. I want to say that my presence here is part of the steering committee of the Theology of Work, Alistair, Al, and myself. And in fact, I'm the only Asian, but India is really not Asia. Would you agree with that? Because India and China are so massive countries. I think having lived in Singapore, Asia means Southeast Asia, actually. That is the countries represented here. So, but I've tried to identify, and as Al mentioned, please, when you go to the Theology of Work website, please make your comments. I think it's a wiki site. It will be permanently part of the website, whatever comments you make. So let us do it from our own Asian, Southeast Asian perspectives. Now, how does... what's the relationship between theological education and spiritual formation? What I wanted to share with you, and please feel free to comment. I'll be very quick. I want to say this in two different ways. The spiritual formation that you bring to the workplace, and then the spiritual formation that the workplace makes on you. I think that is the connection, because I think, who was it? I think Dr. Karyan mentioned, who said, no, we don't want to glorify the Joshuas and Daniels. But you remember, Joshuas and Daniels did not suddenly drop from heaven. They also became Joshuas and Daniels because of a certain process. So, now I've been with the Indian government for 28 years, 6 months and 26 days. That has been my theological training, because the government of India teaches you a lot of theology that you don't actually learn in seminaries, and which is really why I think I'm here. Let me tell you a few things. Now, during those years, I mean, the way I came to Christ through the InterVarsity movement in India, I come from an Anglican background, but I think when I chose to be a civil engineer, which is a very corrupt profession in Malaysia and in India, so I was not really keen on going into the marketplace. I would prefer to be a teacher, but when I was finishing my master's degree, and my professors were keen that I should do a PhD and return to teach in the Indian Institute of Technology in Madras, but God had other plans. And I had 4 role models from the Old Testament, Joshua, Daniel, Nehemiah, and Esther. And because these were people who were leaders in non-Jewish context, which is true for all of us here, non-Christian context. And there they represented God in society, in the workplace. And I wanted to identify 3 things that I felt we should bring to the marketplace, which teaches you theological education. So if you want to preach a message as a pastor from the pulpit, these may be good pointers. One is the inward separation that you see in Daniel chapter 1. He resolved not to defile himself with the king's meat, but an outward identification. So when Jesus talked about salt and light, in the same breath actually, he was giving this paradoxical combination. They were quite happy to accept the names of Babylonian gods, Daniel and his 3 friends. But inwardly they were separate. And I want to say that you really cannot influence society from the marketplace if you don't identify. I think we Christians, in fact, if you've been in Ben's company in the last few days, not only 2 days, you would have heard a lot about the Indian church. We are not in a very good state, ethically speaking. And we are having what is called an Operation Nehemiah, where we get about 60 Christian leaders and we are praying together Nehemiah's prayer, "I and my father's house have sinned." That is, if we are the light of the world, and if the world is in darkness, then we have to be blamed, not the world. If we are the salt of the earth, Al mentioned that. If the world is deteriorating, our society is deteriorating, this is the church, the Christian church, that has to look at. And we find that the problem with the Christian is that we are salt when we should be light. What I mean to say is we are hopelessly compromised. Or we stand out like sore thumbs when we have to identify. And that's where I've taken a Malaysian lesson to my Indian friends. When I read your prayers in Merdeka Day and Malaysia Day, I think it's a great prayer for the country. You're wanting to bless the people of Malaysia, whereas we have not learned to pray like that in India. Thirdly, the combination of honesty and competence. Daniel 6 verse 4, he was neither negligent nor corrupt. I think that's a great combination. In my country, I don't know about your countries, honest people are incompetent and competent people are dishonest. Have you had that problem? You know, I have come to this conclusion after these 28 years that if you are competent, your bosses will put up with your honesty. Because after all, somebody has to do the work. Let me frankly tell you that in some places Christian spirituality is almost mediocrity. I don't know where we got that. It cannot be from the Bible. But that has been one of our big problems. Now, I've also listed out four things that I personally have taken back from the workplace. Of course, Paul and Alvin have written that good book. I think that's something that I see coming up in the Alpha thing as well. I think the our own personality getting polished, I think that is so important. If God puts me in a tough workplace, it really polishes off the sharp corners, and I think I become more relatable, more accessible. And I think I remember during my days in the government, it's not very easy, particularly my last years in Calcutta. Those of you are familiar with that city of Mother Teresa, but it's a city of unions, where you constantly hear slogan shouting, and in the midst of it you have to perform. And when you're chief engineer over a quarter of a country, looking after the construction of telecom buildings, which is my last responsibility, it's not very easy. But you also realize that that's the place where you are being sharpened for the thing that has to do. Secondly, in the Indian context, I don't know how it will fit you, how is the vocabulary of right and wrong, for example? Are words hardly heard in our workplaces? What works and what doesn't work is really what we are discussing. And I had to deliberately learn to use those words when I was speaking to my bosses, my colleagues, because I think if we are Christians, I think that is what the workplace forces you to do. It's there on the inside, philosophically, theologically, but to be able to be vocalizing those. And thirdly, of course, dependence on God. I think you are pushed into corners. This morning I wrote to Paul and got the extract of the sayings of the Desert Fathers. Now, Desert Fathers and Government of India engineers, what have they in common? Because my job can be a desert too. And what is God saying to me through those desert experiences? Those of you who have been following Tim Liu, my good friend in Singapore, and he's now leaving a job and moving into another. And that's a kind of an experience. You ask him, I don't want to say anything more. Fourthly, you begin to recognize the real goodness in other people. You know, this whole idea that I am the only one who's honest, you know, this is a horrible thing. And even people who are not Christians, one of the things we notice in India is that some of our non-Christian friends are far more honest than Christians, and we just take the name of Christ in vain. And so I think those are some of the things that we learn from the workplace. Now, how does it relate to theological education is really what I was struggling with as I was preparing this presentation. Because I think when we hear, I think it was Dr. Kariyamu mentioned that from the pulpit only one Sunday in a year, or 11 sermons in 12 years, is it? Yes. Something like that. I think we have to go beyond simple moralisms in our preaching from the pulpits. What I have learned is to learn to indwell the biblical story so that you become part of it. Those of you who would be coming to the EAGC, I think Al will have a lot to say to us from Joseph. So, any questions? Al, you want to say something? Yeah, we have another 5 minutes. Asia, I don't know, but the Indian Standard Time is called Indian Stretchable Time. Any comments from your side? Yes, Ben.
I think I would echo what dear brother is saying. In India, in Chennai, in my bank, we meet every Friday. And you know, what is our prayer? It is not for the people in the marketplace. It's for the pastors, it's for the theologians, it's for the seminarians, the so-called Christian people who are corrupt, who are... I'm serious, it's not for... I'm not happy about it. As brother said, Church of South India is fighting 100 odd over cases in the High Court against the bishop for his siphoning of money, for his womanizing. We are going through tough times. So somebody said we should call the business people and ask them to sign saying that they will not be. Our prayer, and even in Singapore and Standard Chartered Bank we pray, is we should call these Christian people and ask them to sign saying that they will not be corrupt, they will not indulge in sexuality, they will have high standards of life. So I totally echo what my dear brother has said.
Sorry, I just make a quick comment. The four characters that was role model was Daniel, then Joseph, and for me it was funny that I find more kinship to Jeremiah, Hosea, Jonah, and Job. I found them to be great role models. And one of the reasons is because the nice part is the first four had success stories. The other four, except for Job, pretty much sort of went to the dumps. And our understanding of what success is generally driven also sometimes by the worldview of what success should be. And so rather than being successful, one of the things that we teach with our young graduates is to be faithful. It doesn't matter what happens at the end. But it's also a part of my own story and struggle, by the way.
Following on from that, I was in discussions with a young guy the other day who's an intern at TI, who's searching spiritually, and I said, you want to pursue success, but your success should be broader than financial success. It should be spiritual success, emotional success, financial success. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And physical success, as in being physically strong. So maybe part of our theology of work, as we develop that theology, is what does true success look like? And again, we can broaden that out, because people do want success, and I think that's natural. So but how can we make that success biblical? So that it's not just a worldly concept, but a biblical concept. We can put that into the heads.
Let me just affirm what Tim was saying. I think a testimony should not just be a success story, but it should be a process. And suppose I went to in front during testimony time and said that last week I got terribly angry with my wife, and I came and sat down. There will be pin drop silence in the church. They'll all be so embarrassed, because that's not what you're supposed to say when during testimony time. But what I'm saying is, but this is a process. I mean, we are all works in progress, and we are not talking here about finished products that will have to wait till the coming of Christ. But what are we, what is the direction, the trajectory, is really what we need to see. Any other questions, comments?
Yes, I've got a comment. I really appreciate your sharing about Nehemiah. And when I say that, what I mean is that when we talk about teaching,
I really appreciate what you shared about Nehemiah, because when we talk about teaching or pedagogy, what often happens is that we teach in terms of propositions, but so much of the Bible is narrative. No offense to people who like propositional sermons, but I can hardly remember the 1,000-hour sermons I've heard in my lifetime of 30 years of going to church. But when a story is told, I can still remember the details and the lessons they embodied in their life. And I think it's very important, if we want to talk about teaching theology or work, we have case studies, we have actual examples of people who embody these propositions, these things that we're talking about, so we can see how it is lived out in specific context. Because otherwise we can have 20 statements, but then all of us are forced to plug in this statement in this context and plug in that statement in that context. But I think the principle is that Jesus came to incarnate and embody who God is in his character. And so these principles are lived out in relationships. So I hope that this is something that we can take away from this conference as well, because I think this appeals a lot to Asians, stories. You know, Asians love stories, but when I go to the West, it's like, oh, stories, that's children, you know. Children love to hear stories. You really want to teach propositional thinking, you see? And so I think many of us Asians, we become captive to this as well. But we don't see this dichotomy in scripture.
Thank you very much, brother, because, you know, as a personal exercise, I've stopped using the word principle. Because principle is abstract. It's not going to change people. The Bible is not a book of principles. It's principles enfleshed in people. Where word become flesh in a good, bad, and indifferent senses. I mean, so I think essentially indwelling a narrative is probably the best way to learn transformation of life, and which is why the Bible is such a wonderful thing. Whereas in systematizing, we tend to get into propositions, and in our apologetics ministry, we are also in danger of giving that kind of a purely intellectual, abstract kind of a thing. So I think that's extremely important. Okay, Al, you want to say something?
No, I think